Today on the Cooligans, we are talking about the MLS Cup playoffs. We've got upsets. We've got downsets. Messi moves on. Heung-min Son out of the playoffs. People are devastated. And NYCFC beat the Supporters Shield champions.
What is a downset? We also talked to Tim Ream. And we talked to him before his last playoff game. But listen, and it's a really fun thing. Plus his whole new project. You've got to get a chance to check that out. It's really important stuff he's doing. And on top of that, we talk about Arsenal bodying Tottenham. Carter leaves the studio. He smashes the chair through a window. It's a wobble, and you got to listen in. That and more today on the Cooligans. Okay, so you know, I love 90s Babies podcast. I did 90s Babies when I was out there. Those guys are blowing up. Shouts to 90s Babies podcast. But Temi brought up something recently that reminded me that, you know, as much as I love these guys, some we're not taking head injuries strong. You know what I mean?
Very seriously.
Yeah, we're not taking it seriously enough. I might have just had one right there in that moment and I've forgotten how to say this. Like, as much as I love Temi, recently he posted, anytime I see a steak, I think of a classic conversation with At Not Alexis, and I still stand on it on this day. Cook it in on wood, in an oven, pan sear it, air fry, whatever you do, still the same. He said he doesn't understand why steak is so expensive. It's just one thing. The dish is just one thing. It's meat. And I'm like, yes, It's just one thing. But you understand, like, there's a lot that goes into it. You have to get really high quality steak. It has to be cut the right way. It has to be aged. It has to be cooked the right way. He goes, it's just one thing. It's just one ingredient. So he doesn't understand why. Why is this
it's
a
not,
celebratory?
It's not pepper.
But I'm like, what do you mean it's not? He doesn't understand why it's celebratory. His whole thing is like, why is it expensive? Why is it like a big thing? Like, we're going to go out and get steak. He's like, bro, it's just you're just heating up meat. There's like nothing else. Like, in his head, I'm thinking like a jambalaya must be like, now that's celebrating.
Right. I guess he's like, I understand it should be as cheap as a hot dog or something.
In his head, it's like, yeah, a hot dog is probably more elaborate to him.
Right. Okay. Well, I mean, I think it just sounds like he doesn't understand basic economy and labor and supply and demand. And like,
I think he does, but he still thinks,
he's not impressed.
Why should I be so honored to be eating a thing? Like, if you cut it up into pieces, you season it over time, you marinate it over time, mm-hmm. you mix it with rice, something else. He's like, now we're talking, where 99% of people understand. Hey, a big chunk of meat. This is.
I mean, does he want to go to a butcher shop, be a butcher for a day,
just for one day,
and see if and see if the you know the to be able to do that job, you also have to be somewhat of a psychopath, cutting up animal parts and finding the best.
Okay, I'm surrounded by you. You think to be a butcher, you have to be a psychopath?
Not a psychopath, but I'm just saying. There's partly you have to be.
Why am I having a food conversation with another person who doesn't understand food?
You have to be somewhat. I'm saying I recognize why it's expensive because the labor behind it is intensive. So I'm saying it should be expensive. It should be celebratory because all the efforts to get that piece of steak on your plate, a lot of people had to do a lot of wild things to make that happen.
Of course.
Yeah.
And also, you have to cook it perfectly.
Yes, of course.
So there's a lot of risk involved with taking a huge chunk of meat and saying, like, nah, I'm going to cook it straight up, just over a fire or whatever, under a salamander. However, all the things he mentioned that he's unimpressed with, all of those things, it takes a lot of risk to say, I'm going to cancel out 48 jambalayas.
Right.
To just cook it like this.
Okay.
And in his head, he's like, but it's just one thing.
Which I don't even understand
frustration. I'm like, but you understand it's a lot of
There's
one
thing. There's lots of things that are one thing that are also expensive.
Caviar. You ain't even cooking it.
Diamonds.
Yeah, it's but that's not food at least.
I'm just saying. I mean, what is this?
Gold.
What is this logic?
One thing.
That is just one thing and it shouldn't be expensive.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, Temi.
Demi, you're confusing everybody. There's not even a way of properly responding to this.
Well, there's a lot of stuff of like, I'm, you know, I question your education, your knowledge around the subject like this. It's a weird
food
thing.
Food must not be important. It's and food's weird, not important to you. It and you hold me, but to higher regard.
I understand.
This is what I'm saying.
I'm not like looking for the best steak in the world, but I understand that the best steak in the world is going to cost a fair amount of money.
What I have here is two people who can't read, but you respect the book in front of you more. You know what I mean?
Right.
Temi clearly don't care about steak. You don't care about steak. But at least you revere it.
Steak illiterate.
Yeah. So, Temi, you got 24 hours to respond, brother.
Okay. Welcome to the Cooligans, everybody. My name is Christian Polanco.
Hey, I'm Alexis Guerrero.
We got a hot show, everybody. Per use.
That's never happened before. A hot show.
So if I'm saying per use and you're saying that's never happened, one of us is lying.
Well, also, how do you feel about today's show?
I feel great.
I thought you were going to say you're, what do you normally say after it's a hot show?
Literally no idea. Anyway.
So how do you not know? You say, I'm excited for today's show.
All right. It's a hot show, but I'm not excited about today's show.
Oh, boo.
So that's the main difference. We got a hot show. We're going to be joined a little bit later by the one and only USMNT center back, Tim Ream. We spoke, and just to fully disclose, we had a conversation with Tim Ream, but a couple weeks ago. This was before
game three.
Before game three.
Against Inter Miami.
This was between game two and game.
Because you were like, yo, he got a head injury if he's thinking he still got a shot.
So just keep in mind that we talk some Charlotte FC, but mostly USMNT with him.
And his new project, which is really interesting. You guys should listen in.
And that's right. So Tim Ream will be on in just a bit, but we got to start today with Major League Soccer. What a weekend in MLS playoffs.
Yes. MLS playoffs are crazy. Sun scored a brace. Thomas Mueller out there balling. Somehow, Sun still got eliminated from the playoffs in penalties. One of the wildest games I've ever seen. That's why this is today's top topic.
This is the top topic.
Let's talk about it. What did you think about the game, LAFC versus Vancouver Whitecaps?
I'm weirdly devastated for Sun and LAFC. I know MLS probably wants probably the LAFC Miami matchup, but Vancouver deserved it for sure.
Can I also just say, well, we're going to talk about the game. I'm going to give you a massive hot take right now.
Can't wait.
Massive. Bruh, if you've got an elimination game with Thomas Mueller and Heung-min Son, and you make up your own rules anyway, why is this game on at 10 p.m.?
I mean,
this is a massive game for the entire nation.
10 p.m. Eastern.
Put it on where most people live. So, if you look at the heat map of population, the East Coast is kind of really full of a lot of people.
10 p.m. ain't that bad, though.
10 p.m. is not great. You got to put this at... This game ended at what? Midnight? 12:30?
Yeah, because of... obviously went to extra time and penalties, so...
Bro, how many people you want to see this game? You got to put this thing on at 6 p.m.
6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m.
Oh, what? Oh, what else are they doing? They paid $1,000 for these tickets.
I mean, whatever. But it's also BC Place. They probably was,
What was there, a rodeo before this?
There was Disney on Ice beforehand. I don't know.
Some of these tickets were going for $1,000 on the secondary market. This is Thomas Mueller versus Heung-min Son. One of those two big names in your league are about to be eliminated.
Yeah.
Right? No. There's no way they could both win and move forward.
And it was entertaining. I mean, we could complain about that. It is what it is.
Don't you think it's a little dumb to not change? All right, sorry. There's fighting. Don't you think it's a little dumb to not change it? Or to make it at least at a more palatable time for the East Coast.
Yes, ideally that would be nice.
What's the perfect time?
I mean,
East Coast. What's the perfect time?
8:30. Who cares?
This is the problem. Is that much of a difference? They change it an hour and a half earlier.
This happens with every sport. This isn't just an MLS thing. This happens NBA.
You could see this coming. What are we talking about?
Sure.
Knew what teams were going to be playing for what? Two weeks?
I'm used to...
It was 2 weeks.
Yes, I understand. I'm used to these games especially the West Coast games. This is what MLS After Dark.
You're an MLS sicko. Christian, you've got the disease.
The game, all right, but the game happened. What are we going to do about it now?
I'm just saying.
We're just complaining.
For next time, you get two of the biggest names, you got to change it.
People are just going to be like, yo, Lexus is getting old. He's complaining that things are on too late.
What time is it?
Bro,
this is ridiculous.
My man has dinner at 3 p.m. That's why
all I'm saying is maximize your ability to market this thing.
Okay, young people like me stay up late. We don't complain about
it. I was up late and I was fine. So, but what about all the 12-year-olds who can't stay up late?
So Alexis cares about the 12-year-olds all of a sudden.
Vote for me, folks.
What about the children? Anyway, the challenge for LAFC, they shouldn't have been in any position where they were down 2-0, and they were. And like, who was it? I believe Sabi that scored the first goal from a long ball from Takeoka. And like, that's not a goal. LAFC doesn't give up those goals. That was like kind of absurd. But the Vancouver has been bumped out of the playoffs by LAFC the last 2 years. They've been building up for revenge for this. And
this was the lick match.
This was when LAFC tied it up and Sun scores those two goals. He's basically carrying the team. And then when Tristan Blackman gets the second yellow and gets sent off, when they're down to Bilal Halubi? Halubi? When he tears his ACL. It comes on as a sub and tears his ACL. They're playing
almost
with
immediately
nine men, and the fact that they held on, I mean, and it was just like torture for them.
But the vibe at BC Place was like one of the most intense vibes I've seen in an MLS playoff in general. Never mind at BC Place, it was probably the best vibes I've seen at BC Place. The crowd was going nuts. All of a sudden, Sun scores that the free kick, which was.
One of the most
I'm gonna call it a freak kick because that thing was wow, it was sexy as hell.
One of he won goal of the MLS goal of the year, which was like a joke, really, because it was like
stop it.
It was yes, it was.
Stop
joke.
It. Go ahead.
You're saying
no, but you know why he won it. Why are we arguing?
No,
this?
I'm just saying it was like voted by the. It's a joke in that. Yeah. He is a deserved player. He should win plenty of awards.
Sure,
there were plenty of other goals that were much more spectacular than his. But this. This free kick
should be the goal.
Should have been
the
goal of the year. That was such a perfectly precise. We're watching it, and what am I saying? I'm like Takeoka's like a little too far to the. He's like too far to the too near the far post.
Well, he was cheating, thinking I could get there. You could not.
It was
like that close.
it was so close. Perfectly placed, and the fact that he even thought like be a little bit like just respect Sun a little bit and be like, let me get a little closer. To like my wall and this near post, because I don't think he's definitely getting over the wall. Like it's Sun.
Well, there was conversation about Thomas Muller was like trying to collect the wall together, and there was an argument about whether the I forget the shorter player's name who was on the left side of the wall
Maybe Ryan Gold or something. I don't remember.
But it was like argument about the goalkeeper was like yes and no, like stay. And Thomas Muller was like, "What do you want the wall to do?" And you saw Thomas Muller had everyone in arms ago, and he goes. We're going to jump.
Yeah.
He's telling them all, we're going to jump, y'all.
He's telling LAFC, he's telling Sun.
I don't care. You know that?
Usually we do one of these. Yeah, we cover our mouth.
We can pause and tell the script writer.
Everybody, he's like, Jesper. Jesper, we're jumping.
He grabs the mic for the stadium. Good morning, or good afternoon, everybody. Good evening. I'm totally fine with everything that happened. And then whoever was the shortest dude didn't jump like that. Didn't jump that high. And that's exactly where the ball goes. And it's, I mean, picture perfect. It's exactly what.
Yeah.
If you did that on the AFC, you put the controller down as you're running around your bedroom. Mm-hmm. You know. So when that goes in, the vibe just absolutely dies. And it was Sebastian Berhalter who's kind of taking on this like new level of leadership. You know, there's a whole new swag to my man after men's national team play, where he's kind of getting the crowd pumped back up. And they held on. They get to the penalty kicks, and we saw what happened. Some of the worst penalties I've ever seen from LAFC.
I mean, Sun missed. I mean, it wasn't a terrible penalty, but he just hit the post.
Sun also, you could tell, was a little bit injured. Yeah, he was like hobbling a little bit on the way.
He looked fatigued.
Post shot, he kind of kept his leg in a weird position.
He also took a very long time to take the shot. Like, he was really thinking about it for quite a bit. In general, like, that's the thing. They didn't put Takeoka in a position where he had to stop a shot, right?
Right.
They just missed. So Suns was just like, he was trying to be a little, he was doing a little too much, a little too precise, and kind of overthought it. But then
Markey hit the post, if I'm not mistaken.
He did hit the post. But
Mark Delgado.
Markey Delgado.
No, that's Mark Delgado.
Markey would have made it.
Yeah, Markey would have made it. I had a backwards hat. Mark Delgado. That's what you want us to call you, my guy.
Okay. Yeah. Marcus.
Yeah. Bro, that was, he kind of was trying to eye him down beforehand, a little bit of intimidation factor.
Yeah.
And then he skies it. And as soon as that happened, I was like, it's got to be over.
Yeah. Well, as soon as, well, he was doing a Panenka, I guess that's what he was trying to do. And even as he was walking away, he was like grinning and being like, oh, too hard. I'm like, yeah.
What do you mean?
Yeah, that was a little too hard.
Yeah, two birds died. What are you talking about?
I don't know how you go from Panenka to just like hitting it into the stratosphere, yeah. Bro.
Too hard is pretty funny. Like, good point. That's a great point.
Yeah.
But Ocampo misses after that. The first miss for Whitecaps, Vancouver Whitecaps. And even I thought, like, is there a way LAFC squeaks this out? And this is another way Vancouver gets eliminated. But obviously that didn't happen. So I'm excited for Thomas Mueller to move on in the playoffs. It'll be fun to watch. Vancouver seems like a fun team. You had picked them to be coming out of the West. Mm-hmm. So now that's looking like a much, much smarter pick. But I will say, what a sad way for Steve Cherundolo to leave not just LAFC, but MLS and the United States of America.
Sure. I don't feel, I mean, look, he's done an incredible job as LAFC coach. I think LAFC fans can have appreciation for the silverware that he's brought. And he's a pretty chill manager. I mean,
he's very relaxed. Here.
Yeah, yeah. For the most part, like, there aren't too many negatives, even though the standard is so incredibly high with LAFC that, yeah, like, missing out, like, losing in the playoffs and having some poor results, whatever, the last two seasons, is frustrating enough to be like, oh, finally it's time for a change or whatever. But I think it was a good run. I mean, to mention the penalties, the one thing I'm always concerned about is Hugo Lloris. Hugo Lloris, remember from the World Cup, he's just not a very good penalty stopper. I don't know. He was complaining after the game. He said that the turf on at BC Place that he has played in lower division French football that is better than that turf at BC Place. So sure, I don't know exactly why. What's the point of bringing it up now? Especially as a goalkeeper, I'm like, you're not really dealing with the pitch as much as the field players. But maybe he's speaking.
You literally stand there.
Maybe he's speaking for the field players.
I will say that. I during the game, I'm like, it kind of sucks that they're playing on turf. And you could see him and Son's kind of grabbing at the back of his leg.
Yeah.
So you could see, like, the turf, you know, the turf causes problems for knees, for tendons, for all that. It also makes the ball pass weird. There's one or two passes where it was just a little too hard. That is Son in particular had one down the half space where I'm like, and even the announcer goes like, man, he doesn't miss those passes ever. And part of me is like, it's probably the turf.
Sure.
He's probably just not used to it, you know?
Yeah, dude.
So we should get rid of the turf is what I'm saying.
I mean, Vancouver is also having the issue where they probably need a new stadium because they're having issues with scheduling at BC Place. And there's conversations in MLS of that they should may want to move the team. I know Vancouver Whitecaps fans are not too happy about that, but it's the stadium is becoming a problem. Whether maybe they need their own stadium that they don't have to share with anybody, but that's it's becoming a bit of an issue. And I don't know if these playoffs highlight that anymore. But Hugo Lloris complaining about it doesn't necessarily help the case about keeping the team there or keeping at least the team in that stadium.
Well, if you build a new stadium, you might want to bundle up. Right. might not want to have it be open air because you guys are about to be a winter league.
LAFC is out. This is definitely a loss for MLS, for Sun.
Can't put them on the thumbnails anymore.
No, but I mean, look, people, I didn't necessarily expect this kind of like fervor around, like similar to like Messi, the Messi effect.
I tried to make that point, and you were like, "I'm not sure." And I think it's now. It's
yeah,
obvious.
It's completely evident. Yeah. So it's like as far as a marketing tool for the playoffs, MLS is probably not as happy, but still, I think what Thomas Mueller has done is impressive in its own right, because he is legitimately, you know, as far as we if we compare the impact both of those players have on their teams, the Mueller just has made everybody better, and you see it. You saw it in the post-match comments with Berhalter. Just like, again, you saw this leadership that he just like didn't really display 6 months ago.
I mean, he did it in little bits, but he wasn't really
It's a lot of belief.
He wasn't the face of Bayern. He is very much the face of Vancouver Whitecaps.
Sure. No, it's awesome to
also
see.
Also, Sebastian Berhalter is probably going to get a move to Europe. I'm trying to figure out what his level is.
Okay. Well, you figure it out and get back to us.
All right. Everybody find out. Imagine I'm wearing a monocle in the next zero.
All right. Inter Miami looked fantastic without Luis Suarez, but somebody at this desk thought that Luis Suarez should start for Inter Miami. They looked a little bit better without Luis Suarez. So I have to ask the question, should Inter Miami consider benching their star player for the rest of the MLS Cup playoffs?
I'm going to say you're not wrong. They did look better, but when you have a guy like Luis Suarez, you can't leave him on the bench. You got to start him.
Bench him now. Bench him yesterday. Bench him tomorrow.
Well, apparently AI has come a long way. This is rude of you to try to suggest that I, in any way, shape, or form, I still think it's difficult for me to say, and you saw the clip. I said, you're probably right, but it's hard for me to say, Luis Suarez, you sit on the bench. It seems to be a lot easier for Mascherano
right.
to say that. Look, the team looks great. I forget his name now, the 19-year-old.
Matteo Civetti.
Civetti, the one thing that I noticed in this game, which I hadn't really noticed in the past, is how much confidence Messi has in him. And maybe that's what's, you know, sometimes you play to that level, right? When there's somebody that big, like as comics, we were all at one point the new comic on a lineup with a bunch of killers, and you also have a good set. And everyone's like, hey, great job. And you're like, I'm basically the same as them.
Yeah.
We've all had those moments. That feels like what we're seeing now, especially in the playoffs. So the fact that it's a 19-year-old in Civetti and that he's playing really well makes me feel like this is like we're seeing him flourish in this moment. It's still really hard for me as someone who just remembers Luis Suarez at his peak, to look at him and go, "Now we don't need you today." In an elimination game, you're putting your balls on the table. If you're Mascherano, it's a lot of guts to be able to say we're going to go into this without Luis Suarez. Because if it doesn't work, that's what's going to be. You're going to be blamed.
It's so strange to me. You're saying it's like hard for you to do that. So Inter Miami without Luis Suarez across these two matches, 8 goals scored. 0 goals conceded, which is like, is he a center back?
Yeah. Why?
5.01 XG, 1.46 opponent XG.
That tells you everything you need to know.
They are
right?
So objectively better. And even when Luis Suarez came into this game, you saw the difference in, it's not even the level or quality or whatever. It's just like the defensive pressure, the speed of the game itself, the space that is created, just having a younger, more sprightly, fast player,
someone who's also willing to press,
because
the press starts with the strikers,
right?
Your forwards have to press. Someone who's willing to press, but also is fast enough to be able to track back, and that doesn't mean they're gassed.
Right.
You know, so I completely understand all the positives, and from watching it, it's very clear to see. It's just understand where I'm coming from.
You are objectively wrong.
I said you're probably right. We played the clip.
But you're saying it's hard. It would be hard to do that. I'm saying
it's still hard to do that. You just don't care about Luis Suarez.
No,
that's the point. You just don't
care about his feelings.
You could look. You could look at a man who's 60 years old and go, "Hey, we're retiring you early. We don't need you in this factory anymore."
Right. You're done.
Charles. He's your gold Casio. Now get out of here. I get it. You don't care about that. It's just hard for me to say it's an elimination game and Luis Suarez won't have something that puts him over the top over a guy in Civetti who's 19 years old, the kid. But the tail of the tape is clear. The team is very good with Civetti in there. And also Allende looks completely renewed.
I would say that he is at the level he's been fantastic this season. All the decisions of I think the only American player, I could be wrong, but I think the only American player on the starting lineup was Noah Allen, if I'm not mistaken. It is a they need those international roster spots. Yeah. They trade out every game they have. They're like, yo, we just need to get like young upstarts from these Argentinian academies, and it's I think it's working out really well. So Silvetti, Allende, who's the other midfielder? I forgot his name, but the young guy
with
that
the
got
curly hair.
No, not the curly. That's the center back. That's Falcon.
What are you thinking of?
The other the Argentinian kid. What's his name? Anyway, doesn't matter. But he was also very good. Baltasar
Rodriguez.
Another just like the lineups throughout the season have changed kind of dramatically for Inter Miami. Fafa Pico can't even get on the team. He's on the bench and. You would think, like, and he's had incredible moments. He scored.
I thought about that with Allende's second goal, where he kind of clears the back line mm-hmm. and is so fast for such a tall guy.
Right.
I'm like, I was Fafa's. That was Fafa's role.
Right. So that's where the level is on the team, and clearly, like, it's whoever is going to make the collective better. It's like those are the people that are going to get the opportunities. Like players, like who again last season helped the team a lot. Yannick Bright. Can't get minutes. Ian mm-hmm. Frey was injured in this game. Weigand, who I thought would
absolutely be a starter, I thought.
But the team with Ian Frey looks better. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So that's the fact that the team has been able to make these changes, but they've never really messed with the core of Messi, Alba, Busquets, and Suarez, and it's like seemingly the weakest link there. Is Luis Suarez. Even though going forward, of course, you're going to have unbelievable the quality there to be able to finish is he's like almost second to none to a lot of even at his age.
I think the point also should be made that they have enough attacking for it. Like they don't need Luis Suarez as much as they need a Busquets in the midfield.
Yeah,
they don't need Suarez as much as they need Jordi Alba.
Yeah, and
obviously you don't need him as much as you need Messi. So of the big names, if you're going to lose one. You could lose Luis Suarez. You're still going to score a lot of goals.
We also have to talk about what the hell happened to FC Cincinnati.
Bro, this was Evander was like, did he know there was a game?
Easily the worst game I've ever seen Evander play.
Shocked. This was the MVP caliber player for 2-3 seasons in a row.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it was like the moment is too big because in the pregame, in the pre-game conference, he was just like, yeah, we know everything about them. Wow.
He's like, Messi. Never heard of him.
Not even. We know this guy. Maybe I've seen him in like, I've been playing FIFA.
Yeah, they don't know.
And, you know, Miles Robinson, I saw him talking about saying like, if we have our best game that nobody could beat us. And it's like, oh, you didn't have your best game. I mean,
when is that coming? There was actually a moment where Messi misses a low angle shot just wide.
Mm-hmm.
And Miles Robinson kind of pats him on the back on a you'll get him next time joint.
Miles, you don't want him to get it next
Miles,
time.
Miles, what are you doing?
A little pat on the head.
Yeah,
real
look,
cute.
I grew up without a father, but I've seen enough TV that when dad comes home angry, you leave him alone, you know?
Dude, Inter Miami, I was worried about their defending throughout the playoffs, and I didn't even pick them to make it to the final. But given that they just magically look better, so much better defensively. Mm-hmm. And again, Busquets putting pressure in the midfield, like he's also not very fast.
He's retiring.
He doesn't even have to put in the effort.
He's gassing the tank, bro. He's like, whatever, yo, let's use it.
And the fact that you expect Inter Miami to like control possession, but you definitely the last 3 months of the season, they were getting burned defensively. They were on counters. It was a constant issue, and they're just not having that problem. Maybe that is just like they're starting to defend a little bit earlier. Like Matt Doyle says, the line of confrontation, they've moved it up a little bit where they can actually put a little bit of pressure in the in their offensive half on the Cincinnati back line or whatever.
It's like my wife. Her line of conversation is the moment I walk through the door.
Like,
that? My wife is approached.
Where were you?
Why didn't I tell you to? And I'm like, I just walked in. How do we move the line of conversation to be on the couch? Let me sit, bro.
Yeah, it was a safe zone by the door at the very least.
I need to be, how about this? I want to rule my house. If I touch the toilet, you can't yell at me.
No, Inter Miami, FC Cincinnati couldn't figure anything out.
They got cooked.
Just it's a shame because they're at home, and yes, Inter Miami gonna have, and Messi, you're gonna have a lot of fans at these away stadiums and stuff like that. But for to put in that kind of performance, I just know that there's nothing you can even really take away from it. It's just, it felt a little bit like they especially in the third and fourth goal. I'm like, yo, they
I mean, at that point,
but that's the problem. Yeah. It's like it can't ever be. Be like, at that point, like, whatever. Yeah. Like, no, that cannot be the game. When Evander lost the ball, I think that was for the third or fourth goal.
Okay.
That is, the heart is gone. You don't believe in the team. Like, you can't even be in that situation where you're holding onto the ball too long where Busquets is taking it from you. With all due respect to Busquets.
And this is part of the argument with MLS is that it doesn't feel like it's life or death. It doesn't feel like you're never, like, if this was in another league in another country, you'd be so afraid of what the judgment on you would be once you left. The fans, they'd be crazy. Yeah. The newspaper articles. And sometimes the feeling isn't there in MLS. We've heard other players talk about how, you know, they lose on the road and they would come home and the fans would be waiting for them at the airport clapping and be like, we lost. What are you clapping for? Right. And actually, that brings up the next topic I want to talk about, which is one of the FC Cincinnati players swapped shirts. They lost 4-0.
Teenage Hadebe.
Hadebe swapped shirts with Lionel Messi. Now, I understand this is Lionel Messi, maybe the only time you're ever going to get this opportunity, but you just lost 4-0 in the playoffs. You were just eliminated from the playoffs. Is that okay? Are you okay with, if you were an FC Cincinnati fan, would you be okay asking to swap a shirt after a 4-0 loss? Or would you understand this is Lionel Messi?
It doesn't really add any more insult to injury. It's already, you've already lost. You know, it's Lionel Messi. I mean, there's a little bit of a sign of respect in the fact that you're asking for the shirt and you want to swap shirts.
It makes it feel a little Mickey Mouse, though.
I don't think so. I mean,
asking to swap a shirt after a 4-0 loss is crazy.
Is it? What, 2-1, 3-0?
Do you think any Tottenham players ask to swap shirts with Arsenal players? Yeah,
it's not a derby.
I get it, but I mean, it's a playoff elimination game. This is even bigger than a derby.
I would not. No, I would. I, as far as the passion behind it, look at expression screaming out. You think anybody is screaming like that from FC Cincinnati?
We're talking about, that's part of my argument, right? That's, you're putting a point on my side of this argument. Because if this was another league, the pressure would be like, you could never.
I don't think.
But there are no streamers screaming. There's no fans.
I don't think it's a league thing. You're saying it's a league thing. I'm saying if during the derby,
I think the fact that it's in MLS is the reason I'm asking.
I don't think I have anything.
You think you'd see this in another league?
No. It has nothing to do with the league. It has more to do with the two teams playing during the Hudson River Derby. When NYCFC lost last year, were they swapping shirts? No, they were not swapping shirts. So.
Okay, do you think if Messi's on Barcelona and they just smash Espanyol 4-0? Well, that's a rival. So that's a direct city rival. So let's remove it. Elche. You think an Elche player is asking for a shirt? You don't think he's like, I'm going to be killed if I ask for a shirt. After a 4-0? In an elimination. Let's say that was on the way to Copa del Rey final.
We're sort of trying to parse whether it's like what it has to do with the league itself, the country that the league is in,
There's two things we're talking about. It's very simple. One, is it okay to ask to swap a shirt? And two, the fact that we are in MLS and there isn't the fan fervor that would make it insane to suggest that there isn't the pressure put on these players to suggest that it would make it insane, embarrassing, all those other words that I can't think of right now to ask for that shirt. That's another reason why you can get away with it.
So
it makes us look more Mickey Mouse. But the point is, should you be allowed to swap a shirt after 4-0 loss?
Allowed. That's the wrong word. Yes, you're allowed.
It's not allowed.
You're allowed.
No, it's not the wrong word.
I mean, who is going to deny you?
The coach should be like, give him his goddamn shirt back.
So who are you mad at? The league? Are you mad at Hadebe for asking?
Are you mad
at the media for not being mad at him?
I don't understand how you don't understand this.
I don't understand.
There's two parts. One, the player shouldn't have asked. And two, the league should be in a place. I wish the league was in a place. The fact that we are in MLS and the league isn't in this place allows him to do that. And we're the only ones talking about it.
No, there's people talking about it, but that's why.
If this happening in Kaelin another
Kyle,
league,
Kaelin Kyle mentioned
people would be
it.
Going crazy.
Kaelin Kyle mentioned it on the broadcast and,
I think she's
and said
right.
she that he it, she it's it, like
she mentioned
should,
it on the broadcast. There's no this isn't like lit up. There's not like who are the people.
Well, that's,
if this was England, it'd be like Football Joe would be mentioning it. Versus would be mentioning it. All these other places what? Would be mentioning it. Because it happens in MLS, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't necessarily mean it's a positive thing that there is this fervor and toxicity around it. I understand what you're saying. It doesn't necessarily make anything better.
The toxicity's there regardless. Every time sure, we talk about something with fans, it involves that level of toxicity. But the fact that you would be embarrassed to ask, you'd be maybe afraid for your life is the worst thing. But there's a reason why you wouldn't ask.
I get it. The 4-0 is more embarrassing than asking for the shirt. That's what I'm saying.
The conversation is, are you okay with asking for the shirt?
I'm okay with asking for the shirt. That's the point I'm making. That's it.
You don't care.
I don't care.
If New York City lost 4-0 to Philly and one of the players was like, yo, let me get your shirt to name your Philly player, you'd be okay with it.
If it's my team, I mean, I'm... okay with it is not the exact word I
Everton
would use.
Everton loses in the quarterfinal of the FA Cup to name any team.
I mean, it's messy. You're asking. It depends who you're asking. It's messy. I understand.
Forget the
people
messy
asking
part.
Messy.
If an Everton player, now answer this question.
Okay.
If an Everton player in the FA Cup quarterfinals was eliminated, Everton were eliminated 4-0 by Manchester United. Not a direct rival, but yes, obviously
right.
Every team is a rival.
Mm-hmm.
You were lost, and you saw Tarkowski go up to Bruno Fernandes and go, let's swap shirts. First of all, how would Gladysen react to that, and how would you react to that?
It's not that infuriating to me. I don't know how other
okay.
else to
so
put
this
it.
This is
like,
a you thing, then.
Yeah, yeah.
How do you think the Everton fans would react to
some
that?
Might not care. Some might be okay with it.
You don't think
it.
There would be
I mean,
like
but, that, but this is the discourse I see.
You don't
I
think
see.
It would be an intense focus on that?
I don't. I don't. I mean, I don't think people care about Everton enough to make it a big thing, right? So is it going to...
This is crazy. This is a crazy statement.
So some people might be okay with it and some people will not. That is what is going to... How it's going to sort itself out.
I think you're dead wrong. I think you...
The majority of
allowed.
People are going to be mad.
I think that's not allowed. Then you tell us. You know?
I don't know. I mean, context is important. It's Lionel Messi.
The fact that it's Lionel Messi is the only reason we're having this conversation, because otherwise, this is absolutely wrong. I can see players being removed from teams for doing this kind of thing.
Damn, all right. Well, you run a tight ship there, Alexis.
There's some players who ask for swap shirts at halftime, and that would, like, your bench, dog. Like, you can't... That's not the mentality I need you to have during these 90 minutes.
I don't think that is as much of an issue as you may think. Benched because you asked for a shirt.
Yeah.
A lot of times they do it either at halftime, they do it after the game.
This is something you do in the locker room. This
and,
is something you do outside.
Does that make it okay?
At least we don't know about it.
that's the thing. You don't want to know about it. That's as much as it's. So it's not a principle thing
But I can't argue about it if I don't know what's happening. If I don't know what's happening, I can't have this conversation. The fact that he was comfortable enough to ask in that moment.
It's messy.
It's crazy.
It's Lionel Messi.
You lost 4-0 in the playoffs.
Bro, I'd be honest. If I don't know if I'm ever going to see Messi again and able to get a shirt, I might feel inclined to ask.
I get it. Terrible time to ask.
NYCFC pull off an upset against the Philadelphia Union, beating the Supporters Shield champions in the conference semis at Subaru Park. Mm-hmm. 1-0. Maxi Morales, the oldest man on the field.
The shortest man on the field.
My man, what a moment. I'm obviously wearing my NYCFC shirt to celebrate. Apologies to all my dupe homies.
Yeah, shouts to all the Philly fans, but not after this one. This was incredible. The goal itself was out of this world.
Beautiful. Everybody, it was a team goal.
But the ball, who made the assist? Fernandez Macau?
Yeah, Nico Fernandez.
What an absolute, vision.
Two passes even before that. When Tavon Gray receives the ball and
can
he's...
Can we give... Tavon Gray is taking it to another level.
100%.
In the last, like, 6 months, 4 months?
Yeah. I mean, he gets the ball and dribbling at two defenders. And I just love that he kind of fainted like he was about to go right. And then goes left and creates just a little bit of space to send the ball to Agustin Ojeda. And then Ojeda nutmegs the defender, gets it to Mercado.
Runs it to the top of the box.
Oh, my God.
One time.
Unbelievable moment and build up. And again, leading into this game, Aiden O'Neal out on yellow card suspension.
Huge loss.
Alonso Martinez tears his ACL on international duty.
Probably the biggest loss.
Andres Perea breaks his leg, ankle.
We still don't know, but it was a horrific injury.
Terrible injury in game three against Charlotte. All signs pointed to, similar to in 2021, when the Philadelphia Union had the COVID outbreak and they were missing all these players, it felt like, all right, damn, this is like, that's it. This is karma.
Asterisk. Yeah.
You know, for NYCFC, and they go there and win. And it's a 1-0 victory, and nothing about this game was dull or boring. There was so much tension between these like two evenly matched teams. It took the entire NYCFC team and Matt Freeze
standing on his head. The former backup to Andre Blake.
Yeah.
Wow.
The player that played in that 2021 conference final.
Yep.
That he had to step in for Andre Blake.
Yeah.
And to have that game
of his career. I mean, and speaking of going to another level, being the U.S. number one has clearly put him at a point where his confidence,
dude, this is as high as he gets. What a year for Matt Freeze, bro.
Seriously, first of all, Matt Freeze is having an incredible year. But the way there was one of the shots where he was towards the right of the right post, and he sort of, I don't even know what he used to save it, but the announcer goes, he didn't even know what was happening. He made himself as big as possible.
Yeah.
And literally, it's like he's playing goalkeeper at the highest level I've seen in a very long time.
Yeah, dude. I mean, he made,
especially in MLS,
some tremendous. I would even go further than that. Just like on the world stage, he's making some the cross. I forgot what minute in the second half, but the Westfield, I believe. Sends the ball to him, and he's already celebrating. I think before the ball even reaches his foot, and Matt Freeze, he sticks his left leg out and is kind of like kneeling, and then the ball hits his left foot, then his right foot, and then goes out. And it was just like, even that bounce, you need a little bit of luck from time to time, but he was just always in the right place and just really never, there was never like many outside of the ball that was like he kind of squibbed and it was like kind of almost crawling into the net. Just phenomenal game. And that's
the one save he had on the long shot towards the end of the match. I think it was Kevin Sullivan who took the long shot where he saved it with the top arm, the top hand.
I don't remember.
It was what a shot. Luke, it was absolutely out of this world.
Yeah.
What a wonderful save. I mean,
yeah. But also speaking of saves, the Andre Blake save that
on his injury.
That shot, that was Nico Fernandez again.
Nico Fernandez.
That was,
if you would have put a little bounce to that.
I mean, it was just it was a turnover, and Nico Fernandez is sending, I mean, and you understand like a long shot. And this, David Villa did this a couple years ago to Andre Blake, where he hit the really, really long ball.
But he did that by like just going under the crossbar.
Right, over the top. And this
Nico
one was,
tried to squib it.
What a curve the ball in, and it was going in.
It was 100% going in.
100% going in, and Andre Blake has to use every ounce of force, all the energy.
He left a hammy on the pitch, man.
Hurt his hamstring.
Who's the other guy that came in?
Rick, Andrew Rick.
Rick. Bro, two first names for last names, both keepers.
Oh, yeah.
Blake and Rick. I'm like, what is this?
So
sounds like a couple guys wearing quarter zips.
So, but no, I wonder if that made any real difference in the game. It probably was tough for Philly because now they are down one sub. So they can't make another field player substitution.
Maybe, but there weren't that many shots by NYCFC after that. It's not like a goal got scored after that. So
sure. No, I'm saying, but it could have helped Philadelphia offensively.
Yeah.
They had 20 shots, and 2.5 something.
Yeah, they looked
XG.
pretty effective after that.
Right.
Again, Matt Freeze and the back line.
So, but no, the Pascal Janssen just got it right, and I think playing them late in the season helped a lot. Because that game was also 1-0, that Philadelphia won that game. But the lineup in itself, you know, I initially thought Justin Hack was going to go into the midfield. No, they stayed.
They kept him on the back line.
They sort of kept. It was like with the ball, he was in the midfield. Without the ball, he kind of like went back.
Yeah, they do that sort of roaming three back line. If Tavon Gray's up, he's back.
Kevin O'Toole, props to Irish international Kevin O'Toole.
World Cup bound, maybe.
Maybe.
You know?
He was on that team.
Troy Parry, homie.
So we'll see how the playoffs go. But Kevin O'Toole, left back, playing in the midfield. Alongside a child, shout out to Matt Doerr, he had pointed out, Johnny Shore. Again, we know what Perea brings. We know what Aiden O'Neill brings. And there's a toughness and then also a severe like attacking threat with Perea, with headers. So the style of play was different in that midfield. But they dug in, bro.
Yeah, Raul Gustavo looks so good.
Everybody defensively was so incredibly sharp. And look, Philly, on paper, they kind of have the sort of better team. Like, as far as you look at the results of this season, you would think that it would, as far as offensively, they would produce a little bit more. But Matt Doerr was talking about this when we were, he was like, you know, calling it energy drink soccer with this high press for Philadelphia Union. And he was even saying, when he was on a couple weeks ago, that it works in the regular season, but doesn't work in the playoffs. And
that's the big rub against Bradley Carnell's system, is can it work in the playoffs?
Yeah. And bro,
well, here's the thing. New York City now will meet Miami. What chance do you give them? How bad do you want Luis Suarez to start now? Huh?
Please. I mean, you need him to start.
Play the clip over, baby.
He's such an important player. Look, anything can happen. The last time NYCFC played in Fort Lauderdale, I think it was I don't think Messi played. I think that was the 1-1 game. I could be wrong. I don't remember what. No. This is in the beginning of the season. I think it was a draw, if I'm not mistaken. Okay. But this Inter Miami, this playoff Inter Miami is a real threat, and it's going to be tough. Aiden O'Neill is back. So you would expect the midfield to look. It's not going to be FC Cincinnati. The last time they played, yes, it was a poor result at City Field. It was 4-1 or something like that. I don't expect that here. I think especially if they have to do a similar lineup. I think have Raul Gustavo play the left back. Have Kevin O'Toole in the midfield. I think that might be the move. I think it's going to be a much closer game than some of these other playoff games for Inter Miami, but I can see an upset happening. They already beat the best team in the league.
50-50?
It's not 50-50. But
I'm comfortable with 65-35.
Okay, so for Inter Miami,
Miami get the 65.
Yeah, yeah. So, no, but I
got this guy called Messi. I don't know if you're familiar with his work.
It's gonna be tough, and I think they can do it. I mean, obviously, I know who I'm rooting for. My objective brain, obviously, Inter Miami have to be the favorites. But this, I think that it showed a lot of heart to win the way that they did. Mm-hmm. And if they can
hold, Road Warriors, baby.
Yeah, if they can just have that same defensive kind of prowess and be that like gritty and sharp. Bro, anything happen? Maybe penalties. I like penalties. Matt Fries over Rocco Rios Novo.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's just obviously holding. How are we gonna stop Messi? We just gotta figure that.
Especially at the end of the game.
But they've done it in the past.
They have.
They did it with when it was like James Sands and stuff like that. So yeah, we'll see. All right. We are recording this before San Diego plays Minnesota, so we don't know the result of that. But I'm very much looking forward to it. Who do you got? If you just a quick guess, San Diego. You think, I think Minnesota again. I picked them before against Seattle, and I think it's going to be Haram Ball or whatever they got.
Yeah.
But I think they could get it done again. Dane St. Clair has been fantastic. All right. Let's take a quick break, but we have to talk to Tim Ream. Tim Ream of Charlotte FC and the U.S. Men's.
He got nothing to do. Talk to us.
Again, we spoke to him a couple weeks before. This was between game 2 and 3 of the round one of the MLS playoffs. So just keep that in context. But here it is. Here's our conversation with the one and only Tim Ream.
The
seeing the name Gio Reyna was shocking. We obviously we're seeing all the stories, the interview that he did, and obviously the drama around it seems to have subsided quite a bit. But it's exciting to see him back on the team. Early reactions of just seeing a player like Gio that obviously is has a little bit of controversy around him, but to welcome him back to the squad, what were your first reactions?
Yeah, I mean, listen, there's a few guys who are back in camp after missing a good number of them. So, it's always nice to catch up with guys and see them back in and you know, see how their lives are off the field, how they're doing on the field, and just catching up and understanding where they're at and in their season and in their in their personal lives.
Now, look, when it comes to the national team, we've had this argument on the show. Christian, not a big fan of experimenting with all these different players. He wants to see the best 11 get a lot of game time before the World Cup. Me, I'm like, hey, go crazy. Let's see who else we got out there. Maybe we could fill out the squad. You're back there on a back line. Does it make it easier for you if it was the same 10 around you all the time? Or do you not care? Hey, whoever's here to play, let's do the best we can and we'll figure it out as we go along.
Yeah, I mean, I'm of the mind that you work with what you have, right? And you have to figure out a way to play with everybody. And I've been talking about adaptability for years now. And you have to be able to adapt to those around you, and you know, they have to adapt to you and get used to each other. So, you work with what you got, and you know, you do everything you possibly can to play well and get a result, and hopefully that gives you a good place to be going into the next camp and obviously the future of 2026 in the World Cup.
We've talked a little bit on the show about your age. You know, it's come up once or twice. You're getting up there a little bit. You feel good, though. You look good out there. You look at the national team landscape. You are definitely the starting center back on the U.S. men's national team. But a little bit in the back of your head, you got to think to yourself, like, hey, where's everybody else competing with me right now? What's happened to the development of center backs in the U.S. that there aren't a lot more people really nipping at your heels?
Yeah, I mean, listen, nothing's ever guaranteed. I'm not really worried about the development of where everybody else is and what they're doing. I learned a long time ago that there's always someone who's going to be better. There's always someone who's gunning for your position and always somebody who can take the shirt and replace you. For me, I've always tried to do everything I possibly can to keep that spot as long as I can, and that's kind of where I'm at. You know, I love working with whatever center backs come in to every camp and helping those guys in lots of different ways. You know, a lot of different conversations, one on ones, conversations as a group as center backs, understanding the strengths of their game while also trying to help them along with certain aspects that they can improve on and push them to that next level. And I can't worry about where the development has happened or lack of development has happened, but I can definitely help those, the guys who are in, help them develop currently and continue to push themselves to be better players and people.
So you got to be like, you boys need to eat a lot more fat and carbs. Slow them down. You know what I mean? Timmy, give them bad advice.
It's interesting because, sometimes you think, like in the NFL, usually like some starting quarterbacks are like, they won't even talk to the backup quarterbacks. Mm. You know what I mean? Like they won't really guide them because you're sort of helping them take your position and you don't really want it. But soccer is not that kind of sport. I mean, it'd be weird if you didn't want to support the people behind you.
Yeah. Well, national team is
sport, right? Yeah, I can't do that. That's not my personality. Right. I would never be that way. I want these guys to succeed. And listen, I can't play forever, guys. Come on. I'm there now. You know what I mean? I'm 38. I'm pushing to get to a second and final World Cup, and someone eventually is going to have to step in and I want those guys to have every success that I've had up to now.
You don't look that age on the pitch, but what's the moment where you start to feel that age? Is it after the game where you need to ice your knees a little longer than you used to?
I don't even ice after games. It's worked for me up to this point. So I think it's more the second or third day. You start to need a third-ish day recovery instead of a first or second day recovery. And that's when you really start to feel it. But I've said all along, as long as I feel good going into, you know, match day minus two, match day minus one, and match day. I'm going to continue to push on and keep going.
I love it. All right. There's obviously big friendlies coming up this window, and there's also two huge games, Portugal and Belgium, in March. When you think about how it's progressing, there's, you know, some positive results, some negative results, especially in the friendlies. What are you sort of expecting, especially in those two games in Portugal and Belgium? Like, what do you want to see out of the rest of your guys?
No, listen, I think those games are obviously all these games are now World Cup tune-ups. I don't think anybody can frame them any differently. All these games are World Cup level opponents and games that we want to be performing well in. You know, you're not always going to get the result you want, but if as long as the performances and the ideas and the, you know, the everybody's understanding and grasping what is being asked of the group, then you know, we're going to be moving in the right direction. We want to win as many games as possible. You know, that these are competitive games, whether they're labeled as friendlies or not, and so we have to treat them as such. We have to treat them as competitive, and those are going to be the tune-up games going into 2026 World Cup.
We have this debate all the time, especially with friendlies. I tell Alexis, friendlies are important. They matter. Maybe the result in itself.
The result, I think, doesn't matter. It's about whatever the coach agenda gives you. If they say, Tim, I want to see you do blank, blank, blank. Midfielder, you need to show me blank, blank, blank. That's more important than the final score.
But if you lose that game 5-0 and you tried a bunch of stuff, that still kind of hurts in some way. Where do you land on this?
Definitively answer this question.
We spoke into that. We just had Nick Raimondo on. We asked him the same exact thing, and he's sort of in the middle, but where are you? Especially
he was more on my side, but okay. Coach Ream, what do you think?
Yeah. Yeah. No, listen, no, like, results are important because it's like you said, it's no different than saying, okay, if you lose a bunch of games in a row at, you know, 1-0, you're all of a sudden your momentum is, it can snowball, right? You have no momentum and you feel like everything's on top of you and going backwards. And the same way in the opposite, if you're winning games, it builds that momentum. It builds that good feeling. But at the end of the day, you know, you have to work on the things that are being coached. You have to work on the things that the staff want you to you know, improve on, or you know, maybe, you know, tactical tweaks or you know, ideas that are thrown at you. So it's a balancing act for sure. You know, you don't want to lose games, but you also want to do the things that are going to get you into the position of being on the World Cup team. Because right. At the end of the day, that's where we all are. You have to treat these games as the most important, because you can realistically make or break your opportunity and your chance to go and play at a World Cup.
Dude, I'm
we're both right, but I'm more right.
I'm just saying, if we was 11 behind the ball, 1-0 win on a gross set piece, and we win 5-6 in a row, I'm like, yo, the USMNT is this is we're okay. On a rocket ship to the moon, bro.
Old Brexit ball, Polanco. Tim, look, I want to talk about you joining the ad council. I think this is really cool. I have one last question though about the national team. Mauricio Pochettino is a manager that when we found out he was going to be the men's national team coach, like a lot of Americans, we were super excited just because of the pedigree that brings. You've been a part of the men's national team for a hot minute. What new? You've also had some great managers in your career. What's one new thing he's taught you about the game or that you think has made you a better player?
I think the thing he's really drilled in is being unpredictable, but the fight that you actually show. Listen, I can't sit here and say, okay, you know, you're going to look at me on the field and you're going to see passion and yelling and you know, getting into scraps and getting into, you know, into the middle of a scrum. And that's not really me, but I've learned over the course of, you know, the past year working with them, how important that is to be connected. Cause when you do kind of get no scrums, you're connected to your teammates, you feel what they're feeling. You're protecting them and that creates this bond, and this connection within the group and within the team that, you know, you feel like, okay, we can do anything as long as we're doing it together. And as long as we're doing it together, we can absolutely, you know, achieve what we want to achieve. And I think that has been something that, you know, has really caught my eye over the past year.
Okay. Get more hype.
I love it.
Yeah. Don't throw an elbow, but get out there and go crazy.
You know, one of the things that I want to talk about, Love Your Mind and the playbook. And I want to, in the context of, especially with, you know, we talk about USMNT all the time, and the last couple of years, definitely in the last 10 years, social media and criticism, and you see it and it's in your face a lot more than I think previous USMNT players. So it's almost a difficult thing where you can't even necessarily go to former players of the national team and be like, how did you deal with this? I'm like, oh, everybody was on MySpace. Nobody was really yelling at me.
So you can't, don't text anyone with a podcast.
but okay, talk about that. And then also talk about obviously the Love Your Mind and the whole program and mental health and in general.
Yeah. I mean, listen, the social media, I think has put such a microscope on everybody, and you know, it can take a toll, and I've been, I mean, you referenced it at the top. You know, I've been there where there wasn't social media, and now here we are with it. It just seems like you can't get away from it. And with the Ag Council, I mean, it's just about, you know, it's a simple gesture. It's a, you know, it's a heart, and then you know, you point to your mind, and it's all about taking care of your mind, because when, you know, it's important as athletes that we're able to speak about these things, because that is, you know, it's been taboo for so long. And so many people look up to athletes and think, oh, they're robots, they're invincible, they can do whatever they like, they can, you know, they can beat anything. And you know, it really isn't the case. You know, we all go through our struggles just like everybody else. And there are things that we have figured out, you know, in our own lives, in our own personal lives, that that help us to you know, to combat that, you know, the tough times that, oh man, I feel tired today, or oh, you know, this is really not working for me. And it's just all about taking care of your mind, because if your mind's in a great place, you know, you really do feel like you can do anything and achieve whatever you want.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you can go to loveyourmindtoday.org. And yeah, even as I'm like looking through a lot of the like the program that I was suggesting, I'm like, this is gonna help me in my life. I could use this just to get up and do a podcast. Sometimes I could use some support.
No, honestly, it's so good, because you know, it literally, you can tailor it to whatever works for you, right? What makes you happy? I mean, for me, you know, I love going outside and taking my dogs for a walk. That kind of helps me reset. I love to go fishing, you know, connect to the outdoors. And then even simpler, you know, you look at, okay, well, you're an adult, you have dogs, you can go fish. Well, I love to do Lego. Lego, I can sit down and, you know, it puts my mind in a place that,
love it.
Yeah, it just puts my mind in a place where I'm just focused on a process and you know, not having to overthink everything that's going on around me. And yeah, it's great. I mean, we've got the Love Your Mind playbook, you know, loveyourmindplaybook.org coming out November 19th. And it just gives a lot of useful tips. And you know, hopefully it helps a lot of people, young and old, to take care of their mind and, you know, realize that's, you know, that's the most important
thing. To hear it from someone like you, who's so competitive and such a professional player and always looks like you've got everything under control, is going to change a lot of people's lives. And so I want to personally thank you for that, Tim Ream.
Also fellow nerd, Tim Ream, let's go, bro.
Lego over there.
My Lego king.
Yeah. Not me. I just eat cured meats. That's what makes me feel better, too. But we all have our own things.
We all, you know.
That's it. And that's the point. Everybody has their own thing.
We all got loveyourmindplaybook.org. Absolutely awesome things that you're doing. Thank you to the Ad Council. Thank you for you for joining that as well. And thank you for joining us here on the Cooligans.
You're always welcome on the show, brother. Tim, we appreciate you very much. Thank you.
Anytime, guys. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Here's a stat that's going to blow your mind. No team in Premier League history has ever blown a six-point lead this far into the season and not won the league. Arsenal have a six-point lead over Chelsea. Can they do it?
I'm not certain. There's nothing about this that gives me the confidence that they will do it, but they definitely can.
Okay, so they look good, right? And there's a lot of stats that I think is important. The fact that they kept Tottenham, and again, yes, we could say it's Tottenham, but the fact that they kept Tottenham to 0.07 XG,
mm-hmm.
defensively, they look good. Defense wins championships, right? We talk about this all the time. Defensively, they look good. They had backups, right? Incapié was in there, a guy who hasn't started. This was his debut for Arsenal. Looked absolutely incredible. Eze scoring a hat-trick, first hat-trick, I believe, in 20 years, I think, against Tottenham.
No, it's like 50.
50 years. Even better, right? I mean, so far, we're seeing layer after layer of this team being all of the issues that Arsenal have had in the past. They weren't deep enough. They didn't have backups in case of injury. They, you know, tactically weren't stout enough to be able to withstand the big teams. They're showing this season they kind of righted all those wrongs. Yes, we're 10 games into the season. It's a little early. But the stat kind of tells you everything you need to know. No team at this point has ever dropped this lead, or at least not won the league, right? And there will be ups and downs. But when you get a guy like Eberechi Eze, someone who I would love to see him in the left. Clearly, he's very good centrally as well.
I think belongs in the – he's a 10. He belongs in the middle of the field.
Look, at the end of the day, I want him on the pitch. I don't care where he's playing. Put him at center back. I honestly don't care. Especially because our center back, 7-10 of Rome forward. Anyway, 3 goals. This was a legendary performance. This was a player that was moments away from joining Tottenham.
Mm-hmm.
Our producer's a big Tottenham fan. He probably doesn't want to hear this again. He was moments away from joining Tottenham. He calls Mikel Arteta and says, hey, if this is ever going to happen, it's got to happen now because I'm about to sign.
Yeah, yeah.
Is there any chance Arsenal do the thing that Arsenal has never really done before? We just say, you know what? Let's get the deal done. Arsenal have always, you know, penny pinched and gone back and forth during the Wenger era. They wouldn't sign anyone to the end of the windows. Arsenal go out and say, you know what? Done. We need this player. Additional depth when they've already made all their purchases, right? They spend the $50 million on Noni Madueke. They bring in Jokeres, which was the one position everyone thought they needed. They bring in a Mosquera. They bring in an Incapié. They bring in all these other players. They go out and sign another midfielder when you weren't necessary. They kept Leandro Trossard, assuming we're not going to need this player. They bring him in, and look how essential he is. It seems like things are lining up for Arsenal in a way that, as an Arsenal fan, even makes me uncomfortable because they've been the runner-up for 3 seasons in a row. Did they do enough to go over that line?
I mean, the things are lining up, especially because the other teams are losing, right? That helps quite a bit.
I mean, City would have been a point away had they not lost to Newcastle.
Yeah.
So it's not like all the threats are gone.
No. But the fact that there's that other teams are stumbling like this, when that was the problem the last 3 seasons of, like, why are all these teams almost perfect every season? And Arsenal are they're almost perfect. And so the bar was set so incredibly high. But I mean, all the things that you pointed out, the depth, I said last year, if Odegaard doesn't get injured on during that international break, I think they win the league because he was that effective of a player. And the fact that they bring in Eze as a replacement for him, and that's the thing, Eze could play on the left, but very much so. I mean, as soon as Odegaard is not in the middle of the field, that is Eze's spot. I would even argue, like, yo, put Odegaard in the... I mean, Odegaard can't be...
don't go crazy. Yeah,
if you want them both on the field on the same time, Eze gets a hat trick.
We could talk about, like, where... Yes, and look, he certainly deserves it. We could talk about where both players would be more effective. I think you find a way to get them both on the pitch. And even if he's on the left, he floats in. And you could have Calafiori kind of take over that spot.
Yeah.
I think the most important thing is to look at the fact that Odegaard was missing. You know, captain of your team. This is a big star. You know, this is essentially incredible. Gabriel Magalhães, also at one point the captain. Again, huge. So imagine saying, oh, your best center back is going to be missing against your most heated rival, your North London Derby rival. You'd be a little worried. You got a guy who's making his debut that comes in. Jokeres, the one, the striker. You don't have a striker.
You got Mikel Merino.
Mikel Merino's in
best
there.
Best nine. Menzema. I don't know.
Let's be honest. Mikel Merino performs extremely well. So what I'm about to say is going to sound disrespectful, but when I see him there, it's like, remember going to the supermarket with your mom and she goes, you'll wait in the line. I'm going to go grab somebody right back. And you kind of like.
Yeah, you panic. You,
and adults are like, well, you go. I ain't supposed to be here, bro. Like, why? I don't know what to do when I got. I don't have money. I can't do this. That's what it feels like. It feels like he's just taking up a spot and it's temporary. The fact that Arsenal were able, with all those injuries, to still find a way to win when Manchester City has quite a bit of injuries, they go to Newcastle, you still think Erling Haaland, what's he got, 48 goals already?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The guy's scoring at will. You've got, you know, obviously I'm hyperbole with the goals there, but you've got, you know, Pep Guardiola, you've got, you know, Phil Foden, the great white hype for all of England, right? Mm-hmm. If Phil Foden sneezes, everyone's like, oh, what a great cold you just caught, right? You've got all these players that are playing at a high level. You think to yourself, that's a team that's going to win. They're going to start to put pressure on Arsenal. Arsenal collapse. They go out and lose this weekend.
Yeah, well,
Liverpool can't stop losing.
Yeah, I look, the biggest difference from the previous seasons to now is defensively, Arsenal are fantastic in the sense that they're not even allowing shots. This is why David Raya will never be the starter for Spain, because he plays on a good team and he's not stopping. He's not doing it.
He got no stats.
He has nothing to do. Yeah. Right? So I mean,
he brings a lawn chair to work, bro.
Look at the goal that they did give up. Just a worldie from Richarlison. And that's weirdly,
who's going to be playing on Orlando City next year? You know what I mean?
Right. It's just Richarlison is oddly can't score a tap in, but can score those like nothing, right? But defensively, all the changes that they made, they've been spectacular. They probably have, I would assume, the lowest opponent XG in the league.
Yeah,
my guess. I don't have that stat in front of me, but.
By the way, 0.07 wasn't Tottenham's lowest XG at the end of a match this season.
Oh, look at that.
At one of the match season, they had 0.01.
Hey, speak with, talk nice to the Europa League champions.
Let me just say, if you were to fall on a ball and it rolls towards goal, I think that actually gets you 0.01 XG.
But no, and then the depth. I mean, having Incapié, having Mosquera. They have two sets.
Noni Madueke is back.
They have two sets of starting center backs.
They basically have two 11s.
Right. And Arsenal have never been in that position. Kivior was the guy they had to rely on.
Okay, somebody, but he was very good at the end of the season. But yeah, but early
I'm
on,
just
yeah,
saying,
yeah.
Like it's not the fact that these new center backs, this new pair of center backs have been like. You haven't even really noticed that these are new guys.
No, these are starters.
Yeah, yeah. And so that's been a big factor.
Real quick, I don't want to move on until we talk about Chelsea. Do you think Chelsea will be... So Arsenal plays Chelsea at Stamford Bridge next.
Mm-hmm.
Well, after Bayern Munich, after Champions League. This is a six-pointer, right?
Yeah.
This could be the match that sort of dictates a lot moving forward. Just to give you a stat, the last time Chelsea beat Arsenal was... Let me go back. Wow, I have to go really far back.
It's been a while, right?
This can't be right. Is this right? August of 2021, they beat Arsenal 2-0.
That's the last time they won?
That's the last time they beat Arsenal.
Well, so about a lot of draws, I assume. They Arsenal couldn't have won all those. They won a lot of those.
It was two draws.
Okay.
In that time.
So they've been pretty dominant.
Pretty dominant. But this is another Chelsea, right? Remember after I glazed up the manager's wife, right?
Sure.
I actually glazed up the manager through the wife.
You glazed the manager
through the wife. I'm like, get out of the way. But,
I want your husband.
You snack. But ever since I spoke to her, they've been on a tear. Is it because of me? Probably. I think, of course, confidence he needed. But do you think Chelsea provides enough of a threat against Arsenal?
Not against Arsenal. I think Chelsea are they're a little erratic, and there are some teams where you totally expect them to beat them and they have a little bit more trouble. But João Pedro, they look good enough. And even without Cole Palmer, that's been still pretty impressive. So, it's an important game. It feels like a more important game for Arsenal than it does for Chelsea.
Completely agree.
But the Chelsea, whatever Chelsea shows up that day, I think could have Arsenal have just a tough time because they're gonna have to defend against some pretty good, very pacey Pedro Neto. Like they're gonna have to defend against some pretty pacey players. But yeah, I mean, Arsenal should win this, and I'm not. I did say at the beginning of the season, I thought Chelsea could win the league, especially after watching them at the Club World Cup. So right now, it sort of feels like Chelsea are the biggest threat to Arsenal. Yeah. Obviously, they're in second.
Thierry Henry said now is the time Arsenal fans should be talking about it as if it's theirs to win, not trust the process. No more trust in the process. This is it. This is the moment. I think that puts a little bit of additional pressure on Mikel Arteta.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan of that, but I will say, beat Chelsea. I'll believe.
Okay. And then Liverpool. Liverpool is struggling. They lose 3-0.
They're not even in the conversation for title race. So now can Arne Slot keep his job?
What place are they in?
They're like 12th.
They're like in 8th, I believe. Something along those lines. Liverpool,
they're in 11th.
Oh, my goodness.
What are you talking about?
One win in their last seven. And they've lost six 18 goals conceded, negative 11 goal differential.
Here are the teams that they're below. They're below Manchester United. They're below Tottenham. They're below Bournemouth. They're below Sunderland. They're below Brighton. They're below Crystal Palace, Aston Villa.
I mean, yes. They also, they win one and they're back in Champions League spot. So it's
sure.
Not...
but for right now.
I mean, it's not that crazy. It's just this team is, I mean, they spent so much money to revitalize already incredibly strong team.
They spent it in the wrong places, bro.
Where should they have spent it?
Frimpong is not a replacement defensively for Trent Alexander-Arnold. All jokes aside, he's not a one-for-one replacement. I think that's been clear.
I would say defensively, I would say he's better, but not as good offensively.
I disagree, and the reason is you have an additional midfielder in the back line that you could bring up.
Sure.
We were just talking about it with other teams that will send a midfielder up. Look at what Arsenal is able to do with Timber. Timber goes up. The connection with him and Saka is absolutely out of this world. Clearly, Trent Alexander-Arnold, when he steps in that midfielder and he was the overload player, he was able to provide that magic because, one, no defender knew how to handle him because all of a sudden there's an additional player in the midfield. Whose responsibility is it, especially if you're in a half space? Frimpong doesn't provide that. He's not a like-for-like exchange.
I mean, he's also injured. He didn't even play in this
game.
We're
just talking about their
purchases. Yeah.
He's not a like-for-like exchange. You bring in Ekitike. That's your guy.
Yeah.
That's your guy you're going with. A very capable striker. Not if you bring in another player that plays in the exact same position as him.
Isak.
When you spent the money to go to Isak, that was just a safe face. That was a safe face on the market because you went and got Ekitike because you thought, oh, we can't get Isak. And then all of a sudden, Isak's not playing on his team. He doesn't want to take part in the training. He doesn't want to play. Now you're like, oh, let's go get him. You already got. You can't propose to a lady on your wedding day. You know what I mean?
Sure.
You're like, bro, you about to do this thing already. You spent way too much money in all the wrong places.
Isak looks lost. I mean, I saw some articles basically saying that he's like not match fit. I don't know how accurate that is or not, but he clearly did not have a preseason with Liverpool. He didn't play.
I would agree with you.
He was in the middle.
10 matches into the season. Need to see you.
Exactly. I mean, and fitness doesn't even seem necessarily
at the stat. This is insane. Liverpool have lost back-to-back league matches, league games, by a margin of 3+ goals for the first time since April 1965.
Dude.
Under Bill Shankly.
Damn, Bill.
Malfunction. I love when Opta always throws
Opta,
that.
They got to be like, hey, we got a little
thing. They throw like a little extra word in there every time.
Yeah. They're like, yo, pull up the thesaurus.
Yeah. watch what I'm going to do.
So,
Shankly Gates, right? He's a legend under the team.
Right.
So, maybe this turns around for Arne Slot, but I don't see that happen.
But there was a moment, there was a ball that was I don't know if it was a cross or the ball bounced in a weird way that it got to Isak and he was like basically at the top of the box and he whiffed on the shot just like really bad and he just like was like so frustrated with himself and it's just like, bro, at Newcastle, you would have banged this,
bro. I disagree. And look, it's going to sound like I'm, hindsight's 20/20, but I did try to say a little bit when Isak was being considered for Arsenal, I said, the highlights make him look like an Henri replacement. The highlights made him look Henri-esque. And I get the comparisons. But if you watch him in 90, it takes a lot of stuff has to happen for him to get to that goal. And sometimes it's frustrating. When you don't get to that goal, all you have is the frustrating. And that's what's happening at Liverpool.
Maybe.
And why are you surrounding him?
I mean, I watched him plenty of 90-minute matches. I thought he was fantastic.
There were moments where he was great. But there's also moments where he's very frustrating until he gets that goal. And you're like, oh, okay, now he's had a good game. I will say, you spent 150, you are building the team around this guy if you spent 150 on a player. 150 million?
Yeah, without a doubt.
And they're not doing that.
They're
still trying to wedge him in with Salah and everyone else. It's
Salah is all... I believe the stat was that Mohamed Salah completed 0 out of 10 dribbles in this game. I mean, as you're watching it, I think at halftime he had maybe 5 incomplete dribbles. And you're watching him and you're like, did you forget how to dribble? Did he forget how to like take on defenders? Like he's like completely, I would even think like that he is like you lost your mojo or whatever.
Yeah,
like
he
is not the same player. And it's like obviously this last season, the contract stuff and there were a lot of questions if they should bring him back. I honestly think that obviously the the death of Diogo Jota, I think this is a big factor of why Liverpool
it's shocking.
Are this poor. And I think it's like a lot of the players are not, they're still grieving. And they're still kind of figuring out how to like sort all this out, like in, from an emotional level. Because again, I think it's sort of torn the team apart. And you're seeing, and it's not like, yeah, you can have bad games, you can have a couple losses, but the consistent poor performances of just like simple things that Liverpool used to do with ease. I mean,
yeah.
People were scared of Salah cutting into the left. It was like Arjen Robben, like cutting into the left.
And you know he's going to do it.
And now he's just like taking too many touches and like has to dribble back. Or
I don't want to discount the Diogo Jota thing because I do think that's a massive issue. But I think we've seen players play with tragic deaths, whether it's at the club or personal lives. We've seen them be able to. Football tends to be a solace for all of that. Football is where you can sort of let that escape your mind. It still feels like these pieces just don't fit together. And Arne Slot's job is fitting these pieces together. You know, very famously, I think it was, who was Bill Belichick's boy? Who was the coach above Bill Belichick? Do you remember?
Coach
back above. In the day, the guy that was very famous.
Not Rex Ryan.
No, he was.
Bill Parcells.
Bill Parcells. Okay, so Bill Parcells, when he got the job at the Jets, they said there's going to be a sporting director, essentially, who's going to go out. And he goes, no, I want both jobs. Because if you're going to ask me to cook, why won't you let me go buy the ingredients?
Yeah.
I think that's kind of where Arne Slot is right now. You made a lot with ingredients that were there already. I'm not going to take anything away from last season. You were incredible making Gravenberg a better player. You made that team click in a way that Jurgen Klopp did not do. And that's in fact, there's evidence of that. Mm-hmm. You saw what they were able to do last season where they ran away with the league. Now, you went out and bought a bunch of ingredients. You got to make that look. You got to make
this dish
be as good as last season. And you're not doing it. So I can understand why Arne Slot, there's pressure on his job right now. And you need to find a way to make this click. You got to be able to put your arm around Mohamed Salah, who's had some of the best managers in the world.
Mm-hmm.
You need to be able to put your arm around him and go, hey, I need you to do X, Y, Z better. I need you to play with this guy better. You need to put your arm around Isak. You need to put your arm around Ekitike. You need Ekitike. Why did I say that wrong? You need to be able to do that. You need to find a way to get these players to play as great as you made Gravenberg play last season.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it is. And then also on Nottingham's, I'm like, why could Sean Dyche do that with Everton, bro?
Damn.
We didn't score any goals on this damn thing.
Is Sean Dyche not the coach we thought he was? Or is Everton as an organization?
Maybe he lights up for against Liverpool. Maybe he still has a little bit Evertonian in him. Incredible, for in the Premier League. And, it feels like this is Arsenal's title to lose. But we shall see. Let us know who you think is going to end up winning the title. All right, let's wrap up there. Shout out again to Tim Ream. Thank you, Tim Ream, for joining us on the show. We always appreciate it. Sorry with what ended up happening to Charlotte, but thank you for everything that happened for the USMNT. We always got a lot of appreciation.
Oh, I did call it.
So, make sure you follow us everywhere on all socials at Soccer Cooligans. You can hit like and subscribe on this video as well. Please feel free to leave a comment on the YouTube if you're watching on YouTube.
I don't know how you do it, but hypes seems to be an important thing.
Hypes?
Yeah, click on that.
There's a hype button?
I think so, because it's in the analytics.
I know that's on Twitch.
It's in the analytics, so click on hype. I don't know how.
Leave a review on Apple Podcasts or on Spotify, whatever you got to do. So we always appreciate it. We got a lot of a couple quick notes and things to look forward to. We're going to be doing stuff for the World Cup draw, so be on the lookout for that. So you can have our reaction and our experience with the Cooligans. Anything else before we go? I think we're good. Oh, happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Oh, yeah. Happy Thanksgiving.
Enjoy your Thanksgiving. We will obviously not have an episode on Thursday because we're not psychopaths.
Right.
Also, our wives would be so mad at us.
Oh, my God. You have no idea.
But we'll be back.
My mother would be like, how could you do this on Thanksgiving?
We have a...
How could you do it, eh? Alexi, coño, Sangiri.
That's how she talks with the same bass in her voice.
Yeah, bro. She smoked a lot of cigars. Fidelia.
We'll be back on
Monday
with a brand new episode. Who do we have on Monday? Who's on Monday?
You'll see when you click on it. Bye, everybody.
Take care, everybody. Have a good Thanksgiving.
Peace.